Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. It once again I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now show. This is scan number 2823. That's 2823. Now, tonight we are supposed to have Eric Ramsey on. And he's from Studio City, California. He is a returning NASCA family member. And he's a child abuse survivor and awareness advocate. Now, Eric has quite a story to tell. I do hope he can make it. He's not yet shown himself, but he might just be running late. First of all, let me read a little bit about NASCA and what we do here. I am Carol Levine. I'm vice president of NASCA. And again, we're waiting for Eric to call in. I'm going to read a little bit about what he does, so I hope he does call in. This guy's he's a heavy duty. Okay. First of all, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse, that's who we are. And we do have a mission, and our mission is, of course, is educating the public, especially as related to getting society over the taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse. Presenting the facts that show child abuse to be a pandemic worldwide problem that affects everyone. Offering hope for healing through numerous paths and providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. Now, you notice that many times I'll put the emphasis on prevention, because I do believe that if we would, be much more involved in our communities and talking to our children, learning how to talk to our children, make it a part of parenting, for God's sake. Don't just teach them about stranger danger. That's such a small percentage of those that go out and actually abuse children. I'm not saying they don't, but it's a small percentage. A lot of the abuse actually comes from home, and that's a terrible thing to think of, because that's supposed to be a safe haven for children, but many times it is not. I can attest to that, and there are many of us on NASCA who can do the same thing, okay? And if we could just take more of an interest, I know we're living in a crazy world right now. If you look at the maps, New Jersey is in red, complete red, for the pandemic, COVID, whatever you want to call the blasted thing. And my neighbors, they actually have it, some neighbors around here. And I pray to God that I don't get it, and I say prayers for them that they recover. It just seems to be going on and on and on, doesn't it? So I'm the night owl. So when people, they can't sleep, they call me up. And they ask me all kinds of questions, and a lot of them are suffering right now from anxiety that is horrific, because we live in a world that just has so many problems. So many times, unfortunately, I have to report that people are going backwards in their healing journey, having much more flashbacks. Maybe they thought they had them under control. Triggers, all kinds of things. Because of the world that we live in, and certainly the country that we live in right now. Now, I'm not allowed to get political, but I could talk 3 hours on that, but I won't. I had a grandfather who was mayor of Westwood, New Jersey, and I grew up listening to politics ever since I was a small child. And I took a vast interest in it, to be honest with you. And there's an awful lot of things going on in politics that shouldn't be going on. And that's why our country is in such a bad state right now. But anyway, let me read to you a little bit about Eric B. Ramsey. And I do hope that he's a very busy man. Listen to this guy's bio. I just love it. Tonight's special guest is Eric B. Ramsey. He's from Studio City, California, a returning NASCA family member. He's a child abuse survivor and awareness advocate. Eric is eager to return, and we're delighted to have him back. So I hope that he remembers that he's supposed to be on tonight. A former professional athlete turned model, actor, writer, producer, and director, he brings a lot of experience to the table. Eric is a child abuse survivor and awareness advocate who has produced a film, The Unspeakable Indiscretions. That's the name of the film that he made, okay? It features four siblings who face the hard reality that despite the different paths and success in their professional lives, their paths will never be entwined. The subject matter is ripped from the headlines. Unspeakable Indiscretions is a story of four athletically inclined brothers, Thomas, Marlon, Victor, and David. As they struggle to escape a dark secret from their youth brought on by their uncle, a well-established pillar of the community, a recent headline brings the story close to home when it is discovered that the cycle of sexual abuse has plagued their high school sports program. It's a tale of murder, human weakness, frailties, and individual deficiencies in all of us. The world was deeply shaken by the Penn State Jerry Sandusky scandal a couple of years back. Well, we all well remember that. But the truth is that the molestation of young boys in this country remains a serious problem. Eric sheds light on this great tragic sin with his film. Eric invested heavily and with his own time and money, but did so thinking, if it stops just one molestation, it is also a great social good. Now, this is who we're waiting for. It gives me chills to read his bio. Because he's such a really, really busy guy. And I had spoken to him a couple of times, and I just hope that, number one, that he is well. He's from California. I don't know what's going on with the COVID out there. I just know what's going on out here. And I hope that he can make tonight's show. If he cannot, you can call me, okay? Oh, boy, I'm Carol Levine. I'm Vice President of NASCA, okay? The telephone number here is 646-595-2118. That's 646-595-2118. And we'll have a regular show tonight. And there's always many things to speak about with child abuse. Child abuse is nothing new. It started probably at the beginning of time almost, and it's not going to ever stop, people, ever. Sometimes we get well-meaning people on the show from different organizations, and they say that they're going to make it go away, and I don't believe in my heart of hearts that we can ever make it go away because there's so many sick, dysfunctional crimes against children, people out there. But I do think that with the proper education, all right, that you can help in your own communities, and by doing so, we can help if every community could get involved and realize, you know, what child abuse looks like, how to handle it, who to call. If they could do that, okay, and just make a phone call if they suspect something. I used to work in detention center, and it was a detention center where kids committed adult crimes. We had police all over the place. And quite frankly, with police officers, I got to know them quite well. They wanted me to become a police officer. At that time in my life, was I couldn't do that. I had two children, and I had divorced my husband. In between husbands, let's put it that way, okay? And if something happened to me, I certainly didn't want them to go back to where I came from. So, long story short, police officers would rather have a phone call come in, and people say, well, there's something going on at 226 Roseberry Street. All right, whatever. I'm just using that. There is a Roseberry Street. Didn't mean to come out with that one, but okay, whatever. This is just a for instance. They get to 226 Roseberry Street, and they see that really there's nothing really that bad going on. In fact, maybe they can't really see too much of anything going on. They would rather answer to a call than answer to domestic violence, where there is a very possibility that there's guns that are going to be shot at them. They have to defend themselves, and that the children, you know, are in danger. So don't ever feel, well, I'm not 100% sure. If you're not 100% sure that there's nothing wrong somewhere, then chances are there's something wrong somewhere, okay? So if you don't make the call to your local agencies, you can call the police, and they can at least check it out, and they will do that. All right. So no one has any idea of the harm's way that police officers are put into. And those who walk around and say, defund the police and all this other stuff, trust me, when they get into trouble, if someone does a B&E in their house or something, who do they call? They call the police. It makes no sense. So what I'm trying to get across to you is we do need law and order. And right now our country's in a terrible state. And I ask that people use their common sense. Look back a couple of years ago and think about our country. And look at our country today. Compare the two. Okay. Now, that's what I have to say about that. The number here, again, is 646-595-2118. If you want to call in with a topic, that's fine. Nothing wrong with that. We can talk about anything. There aren't too many places that I haven't worked. I have a lot more schooling that I talk about. And in order to keep the state jobs that I had, they sent me to school. And I was still having panic attacks, people. Yes, I was. My panic attacks, because of my abuse, started at the age of 9. And they didn't go away until I was 49. And there was no magic pill that made them go away. I just simply got so blasted mad at my panic attacks that was stronger than the actual panic attack. So it worked for me. That's all I can tell you. I was not going to stay in the house. I was not going to not go shopping. People who know me know I like to shop. And I wasn't going to let it define who I am. And once I came to that realization that, you know, this is baloney, no one's holding a gun to my head or whatever. I remember the gun is only a weapon. It's the person who pulls the trigger that you have to worry about. Anything can be a weapon. But the point was no one was doing that, and I got really, really mad, and my panic attacks went away. Unfortunately, 9 to 49 is 40 years, and that's a long time to have panic attacks. That's just one thing that child abuse does to children. There's so many things that happen to children who have to suffer from being abused as a child. We have no voice, or even sometimes when we do have a voice, it doesn't go anywhere. Or maybe people will say you're lying, or you're nothing but a snotty-nosed kid, get out of here. You know, you don't know what you're talking about, whatever. But child abuse has 10 ways to heal. Now, you can heal. I always tell people that when you get on your healing journey, it's something that I started, I think, maybe 12 years ago now, because before I was on NASCAR, I was on another radio show, so I'll say 13 years ago. There is such a thing called the healing journey. You get on the healing journey, and if you get the proper help, okay, I don't care where you get it from, but the proper help, you can heal. There is life after abuse. It's as simple as that. And it's good to know that, all right? It's good to know that there is life after abuse. Unfortunately, people many times get into a rut, and that's when the night owl, me, comes in because the phone calls come in. And I was saying today at physical therapy, unfortunately, I have an arm that got injured, and I was over physical therapy. But I received a phone call the other night. Well, for me, it was nighttime. It was 6:30 in the morning, okay? That's the normal people time. And I was really just about asleep finally. The phone rings, and instead of answering the normal way, like a person would do, I lifted the phone up, and I said, "Shut up," and I hung it up. Oh, my God. They laughed. They howled because they know me, okay? They know me. They're friendly people. We talk, and I really like them a lot. And so I had to call a person back and say, "Oh, my God, please forgive me. I didn't even know what I was doing. I was so sleepy." But in the a.m. hours, okay, people, their minds many times, they race. The mind races, okay, especially if you're a hypervigilant type of person. Another thing that you can have from child abuse is hypervigilance. It's something that comes upon you, and you can jump at a sound. Even if it's, say someone pops a balloon, you might think that it's a gun or something, whatever. You know, and you'll jump. When you go into restaurants, you always have a thing about looking for the exit door. You look for the exit door because there's this thing that's like built into a person who suffers from hypervigilance. I had it for a while too, so I can speak actually from my own experience having that. You look for a way out in case you feel like you could have a panic attack. Or maybe you feel threatened by something else. It's just something that happens to people. And that's a damn shame, okay? Now, when we're children, we didn't ask to be born, number one. And number two, we were brought into this world, and we should be happy. We should be, you know, free. We should be running and happy and jumping and have friends and all these good things that you see the normie kids do. We call them the normie kids around here, or the normie people. But with many of us, our childhoods are taken away. They're just simply taken away because of the dysfunction in our family. So I zero in around family. You know, you look at kids going down the street, and they're involved with gangs and all this other stuff. Some, actually, their parents are in gangs, too. And so that can be generational. That's where the sociopath comes from many times. But even if you don't come from gang background, if you come from an environment that you're at risk, maybe you're being physically abused, maybe, like you're being beaten, or you're being sexually abused, whatever it might be, okay? Whatever the abuse is, neglected, you're dirty, you don't have clothing, you don't have enough food, and, you know, whatever the case might be, emotional abuse is horrific. That's a whole topic in itself, being called names, being made to feel less than. You come from a background like that, and you're a kid, okay? And the people who are supposed to love and nourish you and nurture you and give you all the things that the normie kids have, you don't have. Many times you're going to end up on the street and you're going to become that juvenile delinquent, okay? I was with many juvenile delinquents when I was out on the street. But I did have boundaries. I had my own boundaries, okay? There are certain things I would do, and then there are certain things I wouldn't do. I would not do heroin. I had friends that did heroin. A couple of them died right in front of me. What a sight that is. And that's something I'll never forget. I was the drunk, okay? I was the drunk. And, usually drunks and heroin addicts, you know, the hardcore, they don't usually get along because one looks down the other, whatever, whatever. In my case, I get along with most people. Usually I'm the clown, I'm funny, I love to be around people, you know. I don't want people living with me. I have my space, I like my space. But on the other hand, when I get out there, I feel good. I'm more of an urbanite than I am a country girl. Country is pretty to look at, but quite frankly, I prefer urban. I feel freer. I feel, I can't say I feel safer, especially now. But I just feel like I blend into the crowd. You see, something else that people who have been sexually and physically, mentally, emotionally neglected, all the abuses that we speak of here on NASCA, one thing that they do is they feel different. They feel different if you've been abused, if you come from a background such as the abuses that we speak of. It does something to your mind. It does something to your spirit, okay? And so what happens is that when we're, you know, many times, you know, if you're too secluded, a lot of times they'll isolate. That's why people can't come out of their houses. I prefer not to, right? They suffer from agoraphobia. And then, or they had terrible panic attacks like I had. And I used to put a flask in my back pocket. I always made sure that I had older friends because they could buy me my booze, couldn't they? So I'd walk around with a flask in my pocket. And if I started to feel panicky, I'd take glug, glug, glug. There you go. And I was quite sure that it made me feel better. All right. What that's doing is putting a Band-Aid on a wound, a big wound. Because when children are sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally, and neglected, it's called abuse. You go through all of these different things that all of a sudden start popping up. And then because they're children, they don't know how to deal with them effectively. And years ago, quite frankly, they didn't have much help. They just simply didn't. So that would make the addict even more of an addict, the alcoholic, to be more of a drinker. And I know what that's like. I stopped drinking in 1981, and I'm real proud of that. And no one can make me have a drink ever again. We have to learn to face our demons, people. You know, we're not perfect either, all right? Because of where we came from and because of what we went through, all of us, many of us on NASCA, 99.9% of us on NASCA, okay, as children, our stories are never the same, but the feelings are the same, okay? And it doesn't matter whether you suffer from one of the abuse or all of the abuses. Trauma is trauma, okay? So you're going to feel different than the other kid that walks, you know, into an area. Like, I couldn't stand wide open spaces for a while. No way. I don't know why. I think I know why. I did have a psychologist finally at the age of 30. And the psychologist was my savior, okay? Very, very good psychologist. And he had his own office, and it was through a church group who pulled me in off the street and said, "You're a mess." And I said, "Yes, I am." I wasn't going to lie about it. I don't lie about anything. People know me, know I don't lie. And, you know, so, okay, I let this person and then a couple others work with me. And that's where I got my help from. And I realized I wasn't stupid. I realized I wasn't funny looking. I'm pretty. And I realized that I can be a person of worth. I can do good things. I can be a good person. You don't learn this stuff overnight, people. That's why it's called the healing journey. Okay? Sometimes you go a few steps backwards. Other times you go sprint ahead. And you know, that's just the way it is. But then when you get to a certain point in your life, when you've been on your healing journey for a certain amount of time, you get to know who you are. You get in touch with yourself. And we all have our demons, if you will, things that aren't right about us. But, you know, either you're going to be a good person or you're going to be a bad person. There seems to be no real gray area in there, okay? Either you're good or you're bad. So people come from these homes, and they have to look more into the homes. Instead of judging a kid who's out on the street doing bad things, whatever, maybe they're stealing because they're hungry, all right? I've been in that position. I ran away from home because of abuse at home. So I ended up out on the streets. I had friends out on the streets. They liked me. They thought I was funny, and they took me under their wing. And they'd buy me my beer. Yes, they would. And they sort of like took care of me. And then when I decided I was in better shape than them, because I did have a home to go back to, not that anybody cared, but if it got too cold, I could go home. If I wanted to go home and take a shower, for God's sake, I couldn't go upstairs because I didn't want to face the family. No, 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 no. I was trying to get away from them. But in our basement, we had great big wash tubs, and I could really clean myself up, and I could change my clothing and things like that. And gather some things from the pantry, and that wouldn't be too missed. Not that anybody cared, but I would take things, and I'd take it back to my friends. And how did I get back and forth? They had friends who were not homeless, who had cars. So they'd wait for me at the end of our very long driveway. I came from wealth. Wealth. And I was treated like scum. Okay? I found out why years later. Took a long time. After my mother passed away, my stepfather, because she had remarried, my stepfather told me the truth. And, okay, so that's the way it is. So the point is, I'm waiting for Eric to come. It doesn't look like he's going to show. And I don't know where Bill is. I don't know where anybody is. But I'm just going to keep talking because I have a tremendous amount of work here in front of me. And I'd like to talk about it, okay? Now, therapy absolutely does help you, okay? I really recommend that people find therapists, people to go to. And you're going to find there's going to be a period of grief. Once you get into your therapy, you're going to realize that there's grief going on. And that grief is actually from the childhood that you lost. People have asked me about that, the childhood that they have lost. Like, where did my childhood go? Well, a lot of times we had to fight. We had to, we were so busy trying to grow ourselves up that we didn't have time to be a child, okay? And so we speak very heavily with the psychotherapy people about that. And it's a good thing to do that. And it's good to find out how to I'm not going to speak about forgiveness here because we go back and forth over that. I say that if a certain individual in my family came to me and said, hey, I'm very sorry that I abused you as I did, would I forgive him? And I think to myself, well, that's a hard thing for me to answer because I know what I went through, and he knew what he was doing, didn't he? So I still can't give an answer with that, but at least it would be recognition that that person had done wrong. Recognition. Okay. Yes. So anyway, that's one thing that we need so badly to have is that people to recognize the fact of where we came from. You know, they don't have to say I'm sorry and things like that. You can't fix what happened in the past. We can't fix that. But what we can work on today is today. We can work on today and make small goals, if you will, for tomorrow. Never to make the goals too high, okay? Because if you do that, a lot of times you can come crashing down. Identify your triggers and look at them. This is something I'm reading from. And this is from Psychology Today. But identify the triggers that, you know, that you're looking at. Look at them and realize, first of all, you're safe right now. It's a trigger. And realize, too, that when you do have triggers, you can realize, okay, that happened. It was awful, but I survived it. You see, you're still standing, okay? This is how you can break the cycle. Every time you respond to your triggers, you are reinforcing them, but on the other hand, that you're responding to them. You have to look at your triggers in such a way that they don't get reinforced. Look at them. Yes, this happened, but yes, I'm still standing. Okay, that makes you stronger. And that's very, very important. A lot of times we have troubles with relationships, you know, relationships at work, it can be in school, or it can be just our friends, you know, we think they're friends and then things happen and they're not your friends. Oh, well, that's a part of life. And but those of us who have been abused, many times we have more problems in that area, you know, with relationships. And that's a sad thing. It really is, because life is too short. It just simply is. Life is too short. And what we need to do is have people, you know, in our corner, friends that we can count on, and they can count on us. It's not just a one-way street. Okay? We just happen to be kids who were victims at one time who have become survivors. All right? So don't get stuck in that rut of thinking about yourself and what happened to you. You'll never heal if you do that. It may not be a relationship to stay in when it comes to relationships if you have to work too hard at it. If you have to work at a relationship and it's draining you, then chances are that relationship isn't, number one, it's not a relationship, and number two, it's not really worth it. Love should come flowing on both parts from both people, and it shouldn't be so hard that you have to really work at it. You have women, you have men, but mostly women, who walk on eggshells in a relationship because they don't want to offend their partner. That could be their husband. That could be anybody, okay? But on the other hand, if you're doing that, then you're in an abusive relationship because no one should walk on eggshells. And this is written all over here, all in Psychology Today, which is one that I use an awful lot of. I also use other ones, but I do like this one. So anyway, the point is, if you have to work too hard at a relationship that you're in, either go seek help with your partner or realize that it's not really a relationship that's good for you and not good for him, okay? That's the way it goes. So that, too, can be breaking a cycle because many times we who are abused, we don't know how to choose relationships. We just simply don't. Many times we go back to people that behaved poorly in our home life. And I mean that. I mean, if you saw a lot of physical abuse, a lot of times we choose people who physically abuse us. And that's pretty weird, okay? You would think that we would learn from the home what not to choose. But we have to break that cycle, too. You see, there's a lot of work to do on the healing journey. But once you get through that work, then you can have a happy life. Because, again, there is life after abuse. So that's what they say about relationships. Another thing I want to talk about, they do recommend EMDR. And that's sort of like a hand or finger tapping eye movement type of thing that they use. And it's considered to be pretty good. And it's a very good possible way to help in healing. Then you have to work with depression and anxiety, trauma many times, and the psychiatric disorders. All these things happen because you have been abused. And, of course, get help. Make sure that the person you go to, okay, make sure that that person is trained in the field, that they understand child abuse, they get it, they understand it, and they can help you. Spirituality, expression of faith, can sometimes prove very, very good, both in affirming and letting go of the past grieving and rebirth of the spirit. Okay, what does that mean? If you can learn to, now, how many times do we say, people, I don't want to hear, get over it. You never get over it. But if you learn to accept that it happened, this is what this is referring to here, spirituality. If you learn to accept that it happened and then let that part of it go in the sense of, okay, let's have a rebirth, let's move forward. If you can do that, rebirth of spirit is what actually happens. And that means a new you. You move forward. And you make those goals. Again, never making them too high, too big, but making those goals. Helping the next generation by helping others, that's very important. Once you reach a certain part and point in your healing journey, you're able to help other people. You absolutely are, because you've walked where they're walking, okay? You've been where they are. So therefore, who better than to help? And a lot of times that makes the person feel much stronger. You can help many people. I know that I've helped many people, and that's by the grace of God. I do believe in God. Yes, I do. I would get into that a little heavier, but not right now. But I know that he exists, or I'd be dead. Okay, we'll just leave it that way. Let go if you can. If you can't, then accept what happened and help others to know that with proper help, you can live life and find happiness. You have to let people, when you're out there trying to help people, people are asking you for help. There's an awful lot of us on NASCA that do that, you know, try to help people. We are not perfect people. But because we've gotten as far as we've gotten, it's because we've walked the walk and we've done the work. We've done the work of healing, okay? We've done the work of healing. So let me talk a little bit about the social anxiety. I know people right now that are going into social anxiety, they have social anxiety. And many times that can turn into panic disorder, okay? And if you want to learn a lot about social anxiety, type into your browser socialanxietyinstitute.org, socialanxietyinstitute.org. Anxiety has a way of showing its ugly head in many ways. It's not quite a panic attack, but it can turn into a panic attack. And if that's not addressed, then yes, it turns into panic disorder. Contrary to popular conception, people with social anxiety disorder do not develop agoraphobia. Well, I don't know about that. I know that it certainly can happen, because I wouldn't leave the house for a while because I had such terrible panic disorder. But you see, again, I wanted to get out so badly, and that was stronger than the desire or feeling the need of staying into the house. I got over it. It says here, agoraphobia results from fear of panic attacks. There you go. That's right. Not from the fear of social interactions. But it's interesting, and I think that's accurate, too. Avoidant personality disorder is typically a stronger or more severe case of social anxiety disorder. Now, that's when you curl up into a ball and maybe go into a closet and hide for a while. I've seen people do that because I worked at Greystone Psychiatric. I was a state-certified technician there. Let me tell you something. They tried to make psychiatrists out of us in 4 months. That's what they did. people who wanted to work there. You don't just walk into places like that that has a police force, because we had also, we housed the murderers. That's how I know about social and the other. But, no, you have to go through an awful lot of schooling for that, and you can't have anything less than an 80 on your state test, or you do not get hired. Thankfully, I passed, did well. I think it's because I walked the walk. It certainly helped. Okay, so people who have the avoidant personality disorder, those are the ones you have to watch out for, because many times those are the ones who can become quite suicidal. If you see a person who is, like, you know, staying too much by themselves or avoiding other people, avoiding situations where there are people, you better watch that person. And I can tell you also, too, because I have worked in different facilities, I actually caught three people who tried to commit suicide, certainly not at once, and they weren't the same facilities. But I was taught, I was trained what to look out for. And sometimes when a person has decided that they are going to commit suicide, instead of being the racy type person they were before, maybe their whole behavior changes. And they may all of a sudden be quite calm, quite calm. They go from point A to point B. It's such a difference. Watch that person. It could be a family member. It could be a friend. Someone that you know. Someone that you'd be around. In my case, it was a working atmosphere environment. All right. I saw the difference, and I certainly went and reported it. And quite frankly, the next day I went running back. This was a detention. And I went there an hour early. I couldn't even sleep because I was so fearful for this girl. And night shift was doing that thing. Every shift has a different thing that we have to do. They let me in, even though I wasn't covered by insurance if something happened. I went running to her cell. Remember, this was hardcore juvenile delinquents. They didn't have rooms. They had cells. And there she was, purple. And so you see, she had tried to strangle herself with her bed sheet. And quite frankly, state sheets and county sheets are very, very thin. And it's easy to rip. And she'd gotten a big piece and certainly was on her way out. So you have to watch out for a person who has the avoidant personality disorder. It's something that you really have to be careful with. Okay, so what else does it have here? If you have social anxiety, you may avoid social occasions, which I just went over, and now I've seen that. The serotonin level in your brain, you see, it can cause all different kinds of problems in your brain. And the happy part of your brain level is all of a sudden goes way down, okay, if you're having all kinds of mental issues. And then other parts of your brain that controls the fear response and the anxiety thoughts and all this other thing, everything gets out of whack. It's like someone took a ball and threw it into, you know, a perfect circle of everything being in order, and everything just goes awry. And it's in your brain. Many times people are on medications, and if you do that, if you see someone who's on medications in your family, and their anxiety level changes and they just don't make much sense and they're acting out and freaking out, maybe they're bipolar or whatever they've been, you know, said to be, that person needs to have their levels checked, because they can, too, commit suicide, or they can become aggressive. They can be either one or the other. And so that's what it says there. And so I'm trying to get across to you that, you know, when kids are abused, the way that many of us have been abused on NASCA, we do go through all of these many different things. Maybe not all the same, not maybe all at the same time, but many times we do have a lot of these problems. You're not going to have a normal person who acts normal if they come from an abnormal background. Okay, it's as simple as that. And here's something that's really going to blow people away. This is from Forbes. I didn't like it when I read it, believe me. Experiencing trauma in childhood linked risks. There's actually a risk of developing dementia. Brain research and neurologists and so forth, and all different kinds of diseases like Alzheimer's. And you can find that on Forbes. This is Forbes. It's www.forbes.com. Forbes.com, okay? And it speaks about people who have been terribly abused. They end up going through these experiences. You can actually experience, dementia much more quickly than you normally would, okay? So that's not very cool. I didn't like hearing that. No. It's like the lady who loses her keys and they find out that it's in the freezer or something stupid. I could see that happening to me. All right. Evidence now shows that there may be a complex but definitive link between dementia and domestic violence. Those who, have been in a domestic violence atmosphere as a child, for God's sake, there's many of us who've gone through that. Maybe you're not hit, but you're standing there, and what you're doing is you're actually watching it. Well, one might say that that's not as bad as being hit. Okay, I can go along with that, maybe. But you see, they found out recently that, and I've mentioned this on air before, I guess I'm still on air. I don't hear any noise. Otherwise, I'm talking to myself, and that's okay. I don't care. But anyway, the point is this. When you're standing, when you're actually standing as a soldier, and all the things that you see, oh, my God, as a soldier, I had people that served in my family from World War II and up, okay, that I'm aware of anyway. Of course, you're going to see horrible, horrific things, and that's why they come back with PTSD. That's really where it came back from, was they recognize that as a condition because of the soldiers. But they're saying, too, now that when children stand and watch their parents beating each other up horribly and they see blood flying and all kinds of stuff, this too has the same ripple effect on a child. This child is like that soldier who is standing and watching his buddies maybe get blown apart, okay, which is what can happen in war. We all know this. And that's a terrible thing. So domestic violence is not anything to sniff at. And maybe we don't talk about it enough. There's millions of children who see domestic violence. And on a yearly basis, now I don't have that paperwork in front of me, but on a yearly basis, there are, I forget how many children in the United States that actually witness domestic violence, but the numbers are staggering. It blew me away when I saw it. It was staggering. But then I thought, hey, wait a minute. You watched it when you were a kid, didn't you? So, okay. But on a yearly basis, okay, there's so many kids that see it. And so that child might as well be the soldier. That's what they're trying to get across here, and that, again, is from Forbes. And I'm going to give you that again, www.forbes.com. Because Forbes offers a lot of information about abuse. And in this study, they're actually talking about spousal abuse and what can happen. So if you witness it, and then also, too, you're witnessing it, or maybe it's your turn, you start getting hit, you're a child who's gone through all different kinds of abuses. Yes, we are more at risk, okay, more at risk of developing Alzheimer's and dementia. That's as simple as that. So childhood trauma, PTSD, to a higher risk of dementia in old age. And that's if you reach old age, okay? So, I don't know. Is there anybody out there that wants to talk about something? You can call me, okay? You can absolutely do that, and we can talk about, you know, child abuse. Right now, because of what's going on in the world right now, unfortunately, child abuse is not really being looked at as much, okay? Yes, we do have those people out there that, you know, look into child abuse. They're with the schools closing down again. Now, it's starting to happen again. I know it's starting to happen around here. It's different parts of the country. Well, those who are the mandated reporters, a lot of them were calling in, and it would give people an idea of how many children were being abused. They could see the bruising. They could see the behavior, the change in the behavior with the children, things like that. And but now, if we're going to go back to all this Zoom stuff, okay, then the reporting is not going to be what it was. It's as simple as that. And then those kids are at higher risk. Then if we have instead the home, okay, teaching, oh, my God. When most of the, and I'm going to say most, I can't say all of it, no. But when most of the abuse, or a lot of the abuse, let's put it that way, comes from home, well, then who's going to see it? So those kids are really in trouble, aren't they? Yes, they are. They're in big, bad trouble. They have no one to tell, do they? A lot of times they don't want to go to family members. Why would they want to go to family members? Family members many times are aware of it. They just don't do anything. So then the kids, you know, they keep their mouth shut, and they're going to get more bumps and bruises. If there's sexual abuse going on, there's going to be more of that because, quite frankly, it's there, okay, right in front of them. But anyway, that's something to keep in mind. Now, here's an organization called SAMHSA, S-A-M-H-S-A, okay, S-A-M-H-S-A. They speak a lot about, they speak a lot about substance abuse and mental health. Violence in the home has an overall cost to society, leading to potential adverse physical and mental outcomes, including a higher risk of chronic disease, substance abuse, depression, PTSD, and risky sexual behaviors. How do you like that one? Risky sexual behaviors. Further, victims of domestic violence, including IPA, and that again is the intimate personal relationships, and child abuse are at greater risk for injuries, and including, and that includes death. Now, we used to say that we lose around between 5 and 7 kids a day, but now that isn't actually the case. They're finding out now more and more that it's a lot more than that. I think it's because of what we're going through in the country, to be honest with you. I think that's certainly... If you have any bad traits in you, it's going to be taken out. It's going to show its ugly head because people are under terrible, terrible stress right now. For a while there, it looked like things were going backwards, but now it's going forwards again with the COVID, supposedly. And so it's causing a lot of trouble. And I tend to believe that the COVID is going forward because now the hospitals are full again. So I don't know what to say about that other than the fact that, you know, people who suffer substance abuse many times also suffer from mental health issues, and they need to get help. There's no shame in going and getting help. It doesn't mean that you're a person who is weak. It just means that you're a person who had been a victim, and you're looking for help. So that's something that you should actually celebrate. Okay, so that's a good thing, not a bad thing. Further, victims of domestic violence, including IPA, as I said, and child abuse, are in greater risk for injuries and death. Keep that in mind. I've seen pictures of women that stay with their significant other, and they continue to get beaten, they continue to get screamed at, they continue to go through all the things of abuse, the physical abuse, the mental, the emotional. Before you know it, their body just plain is too beaten, and they die. They die. 1 in 4 women and nearly 1 in 10 men have experienced IPA, okay, sexual violence, physical violence, and stalking. That's interesting. Moreover, 43 million women and 38 million men experienced psychological aggression by intimate partners. Now, that really blows people away. I'll read that again. 43 million women and 38 million men experienced psychological aggression by intimate partner. There was a lady listening one night, and she couldn't believe that. She hung up. She said, no. It's always a guy. It's always a guy. No, it's not always a guy. A lot of times there's women out there that are just as bad as the men. This can happen. Okay? And because it does happen, it's something that should be addressed. A lot of women can be aggressive and abusive towards their partner. And if they have children, certainly towards their children. Okay. It is important to acknowledge the intimate partner abuse can extend beyond physical injury and result in death with adults, too, not just with children. So it shows from the United States crime reports suggests that 16%, that's approximately 1 in 6, are homicides. Okay. 1 in 6 are homicides. Now, that's actually more than I would ever, you know, ever think. My Alexa is talking to me, and I don't know why. Okay, that was from the CDC. That was from the CDC. Alexa, shut down. Okay, now, the state government reports children, an estimated 14,500 to 17,500 foreign nationals are trafficked into the United States. I'll read that again, 14,500 to 17,500. Now, this comes from the state.gov reports. State.gov reports. Approximately 200,000 American children are at risk for trafficking into the sex industry, and that is from the United States Justice Department. So you see, we're living in a world that has an awful lot of problems. An awful lot of problems. So I really don't know what to say here, other than the fact that people have got to start changing. They have to start getting help, for God's sake. You know, there are many of you out there right now, excuse me, who are listening. You know, you have problems, and you don't do anything about it. And then you're suffering, and then the people around you are suffering, and that's not fair to anyone. It's not even fair to yourself. And you came, where did you come from? You came from families that were terribly dysfunctional. And this is why I said way back when I started this, you know, that people have to start looking more. Social services and other departments have to start looking more into the family structure, not only at the child, the product of the family structure, but the family structure itself, okay? They're saying that a lot of this is caused, too, with the stress, the loss of jobs, isolation, trying to be a teacher, taking on that role, etc., lack of food, and so forth. UNICEF, it says, concerned because many of the abusers at home, right where the child are, they're all being abused. Many of them are being abused right now from child. And here's from 2020. Oh, my God. I can't believe I have so much information here. All right. In 2020, The job loss and the stress between intimate partners is now taken on to the children. Many abusers not reported because mandated reporters were not available. And the hospitals report mental health problems for both parents and child. Children become isolated. Lack of work with parents causes much too much stress with the parent, and this is from the FBI. And we know these things. It's just common sense. Child maltreatment during COVID. Even that in itself, because of the COVID, a study on maltreatment and a surge, injuries to the brain, bleeding, and skull fractures. Wonderful. That's what the hospitals are actually seeing now. That's what they're seeing. 130,000 reports from DCFS hotline services of child abuse just this year. Now, that runs into 2021. Okay, 130,000 reports from DCFS hotline services of child abuse just this year. Now, when you have statistics like that coming from reputable sources, it can't be denied. It just simply can't be. And it says here also, too, that if you have a pre-existing mental condition, whatever it might be, during the COVID, stress and anxiety because you're so afraid you're going to get the COVID or, you know, all the other things that are going now. We've got the Omicron and all this other stuff. I mean, it just goes on and on, doesn't it? Stress and anxiety, and then those people too many times will become very lonely. I know of a person right now that refuses to walk out of their house because they're afraid to breathe the air. And they say to me, well, look, it's coming from somewhere. So it must be in the air. So you see what this is doing to people. And those who drink are drinking more, and those who drug are drugging more. Self-harm is high up, and suicide rate and other risky behaviors are way, way up. So I don't think that people are looking at child abuse right now. And this, again, is, this is very, very hard on the children because before, at least they had people championing their cause, if you will, championing their cause. They had people, you know, who were willing to, look into situations and so forth. Not a wonderful job were they doing, but at least there were some people out there in different organizations who were dedicated and were looking. But now because of all the COVID restrictions, those children that are home and being, supposedly taught there, they're going to all kinds of hell. They're going to all kinds of hell, okay? Whatever they were going through before, they're going through 10 times more, okay? Or maybe even that's saying too little. They're going through a lot more. So anyway, all right, here's some thoughts. This was handed. I think actually this came off of our NASCA website. And I should talk a little bit about the NASCA website because it's very, very important. When I go out and I do my presentations when I'm allowed, okay, I'd use a lot of the information right off of our website. Our website is phenomenal. I mean, it has a wealth of information on there. One thing I'd like to talk about is something that was sent in by someone else, and quite frankly, it teaches you how to speak, you know, to your children about the abuse out there. Because, you see, children are so innocent. They don't catch on. They don't get it. They can be at outside playing ball, which is not what they usually do anymore, is it? Now that everything is they're on their phone all the time. They're playing games on their phone, or they're on the computer, and they're on the computer too much, and that's another subject in itself. But if they do go outside and they hang out with their friends, whatever they're doing, a lot of times they don't realize that there are people out there that are bad. and they're watching them, and they're looking for their prey, and that's P-R-E-Y. P-R-E-Y. And if children are not being watched well enough, a lot of times, you know, a kid can disappear. You know, maybe they're staying to go with their buddies, and then all of a sudden they decide to go home, they split, the one kid doesn't make it home, okay? The parents have got to simply become more assertive in their children's lives. I know we're under a lot of stress right now. I know that. But on the other hand, our children need us. Now, you talk to them and you teach them when they're very little, you know, how to cross the street. We do this. But we don't teach them a lot of times about the other things in life that they should learn about. And many times it's because the parents are just plain, I don't know, too embarrassed. Well, if you're too embarrassed to talk to your child about what's going on out there, then your child, you're putting, it's a big disservice to your child, okay? The child is going to be far more at risk, far more at risk of being abused, maybe being kidnapped. Bill was kidnapped. I was kidnapped. There's probably other people on NASCAR that were kidnapped, I'm sure. We have a lot of followers. A lot of them were kidnapped. We weren't being watched, maybe. In Bill's case, it was a little bit different, and I won't speak his story. He can speak his own story. But when kids are not being watched the way that they should be watched, and if they haven't been taught what to look out for, then they can easily become a child who's going to be a missing child. When I go into Walmart, and I don't mind saying I go into Walmart, I happen to like Walmart, and I look at those missing kids, you know, up on the billboard there that they allow for missing exploited children to put, they put the children who are missing. It makes me freeze. Because I was kidnapped. I was brought back. I was kidnapped and raped, but I was brought back. Now, these kids obviously were not brought back. And many of them are dead, but they haven't found them. And then you have those kids that are out on the street and they're being pimped out, left and right. Some of the kids leave the country. Now, one thing that they have tried to do is to educate, and here we go back again to the word educate, you know, people, society, all right, what to look for. If you're at an airport and kids are acting weird, they're not acting like children, maybe they look very tired, maybe they're dressed inappropriately, maybe they're dressed too sexual if they're a little girl, and they're not allowed to hold their own paperwork or anything. Or anything that they might be, if they're going out of the country, their own passports or anything like that, because their abductor is right there. The pimp is right there. And they are going to go out of the country. There's a certain amount of children. At one time it was 100,000. Now they're saying 199,000. I don't know if those are right, so don't quote me on that. But a year, they, you know, disappear. And go into other countries. I have to look more into that one. Not 100% sure. So the point is, though, there's an awful lot that do go into other countries from our country. And then there's a lot that come from other countries into our country. It sort of goes back and forth, doesn't it? So they're teaching taxi cab drivers what to look for. They're teaching people at the airports what to look for in children. If a child gets on a plane, and we all know what the plane food is like. I've been on a plane. I was out in San Francisco, my husband and I. We did do some good things, believe it or not. Yes, we did. We were out in San Francisco, and so we took a plane. And, you know, so we flew out, obviously. So, but they're teaching the people who work on the planes what to look for because the food is really quite bad. I think it's very bad. I don't know. But if a kid is gobbling food that isn't very good, like it's a sundae or something, or an ice cream cone, that kid is hungry. That kid is hungry. You see, the pimps, they don't treat the kids too well. They don't treat anyone too well, because their purpose in life is to make money off of these children. And they take them all over the place. You know, a lot of times it's in urban areas in our own country. And other times they take them out of the country. And, you know, there's just certain different behaviors. Now, we have this information on our website. So what I'm trying to get across here is I want to talk to you, the parent, of a good home, all right? When kids come from bad homes, no one tells them anything, how to protect themselves. But if you're a parent that loves your child and you want your child to grow and to prosper, you don't just teach them how to cross the street, okay? You start talking to them at an early age, and by doing so at an early age, you can educate your child and teach that child what signs, what red flags to look for. Say you're living in a neighborhood and some, I'll use a man because there are more men pedophiles, however, there are quite a few female too. They're finding this out more and more as time goes by. And you want to be friendly to your new neighbor and you're having a barbecue. Let's invite John. We'll call him John, all right? John over. And John spends too much time with the kids more than with the adults. So the kids are playing baseball, okay? Or something. Or basketball. They're playing basketball. And you have a court in your yard. Well, that's not normal. It could be a red flag. Adults are supposed to be with adults, children with children. It's good to go over and mingle a little bit, be friendly. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing. But if you're someone who gets too friendly, that person is looking for their prey, P-R-E-Y. They're going to look the kids over. And the one who seems meekest, the most meek, the one who seems distant, the one who hangs their head down because maybe they don't have any friends, okay? They may be playing basketball, but they don't have any really friends, or maybe they're being picked on a lot. Kids can pick on other kids so badly. So, all right, that child, a different child, he acts different. So the man will be standing there, the pedophile will be standing there looking at him. And he knows. He goes over to the adults and he finds out, you know, whose child is whom, and has conversations with them. Acts completely normal. May have a wonderful job, maybe a nice home, maybe a good-looking car. He's single, although he can be married too. Don't think he can't be. But on this particular case, he's single. And then you get to know the parents really well. It gets to go over their house, whatever. And, you know, hey, you and so-and-so, you guys work so hard. Why don't you go out for a while. I'll watch Junior. They go out. And what does he do? He puts his hand on the kid's leg. He puts his hand on his shoulder. This is how it starts out. And the kid may not even feel uncomfortable because this is almost like a friend to him. Okay. Maybe it'll happen again, you know, a couple months down the line. They take their time. They don't. It's not a rush act, especially when they live right down the block, right? No one's going anywhere. So then what he does is he puts his hands a little bit more and maybe hold it longer, and maybe he'll rub the kid's back and you know, play with the kid's hair, and the kid's starting to feel a little funny, but not knowing anything, all right? He's just a kid. And the next time he's with him alone, whatever the case might be, hey, come on, let's go to the park. I'll take you to the park. I'll call your parents up. We're going to go to the park. He takes the kid to the park. and he's with him more. He builds a rapport with the kid. He finds out what the kid likes. He finds out what kind of music the kid likes. He might even buy gifts for the kids, but keep it secret. Okay, keep it secret. Because this is between you and I. This is between you and I. Okay? This is our secret. Well, before you know it, he's giving the kid, maybe he's giving him booze, letting him smoke cigarettes. Okay, say he's a smoker, he lets the kid smoke. Makes him feel special, makes him feel more adult than what he actually is, okay? The kid thinks, wow, I've got a really cool friend here, and geez, my dad, he never gives me attention like this. He gets to really like the guy. Before you know it, okay, it doesn't take much longer after that point. He starts to get sexual with the kid. He starts feeling him, having him feel him, oh, come on, all this sort of stuff. He is then a victim. He was a victim from the start. He just didn't know it. So you see, this is where the parents fail so. If I was a teacher, I would give them an F, okay, because they didn't teach their child what to watch out for. And they, too, needed to be educated, didn't they? Now, we have this information. We have this information on NASCA, NAASCA.org, NASCA.org. We have it. And David Pittman is very good at what he writes. He teaches you how to speak to your children. Again, we speak about prevention, intervention, which is what that would be, too. Intervention, if you think your child has been abused or maybe you know a kid down the street who's been abused. He teaches all of it, prevention, intervention, and recovery. All the things that we speak about right here on NASCA. He has very good articles. And there are other people who have good articles. I've sent some articles into Bill that he's posted. Other people have sent things in that Bill's posted. Bill's posted some himself, you know. We have a tremendous amount of information right on our website. I suggest that everyone who's listening to me, if there is someone listening to me, I'm not sure. I think there is. But I suggest this. I suggest that you get to know our website very well, because you can learn a lot from our website. And if you go over to the left side of the website, it starts out with programs. You might be a person, you know, who listens to NASCA, okay? You're listening to NASCA. You're listening to me talk. But you'd really like to be more social. Maybe you're not a person who isolates themselves. They'd like to be more social. And, you know, let me tell you something. The old saying that there's a power in numbers, okay? There's strength in numbers. When you find a program that's close to your home, and you can do that, all you have to do is go to the first column on the website there. It's in red letters, and the first one to the left is programs. You open it up. I'm from New Jersey, and you go to New Jersey. You see the world spinning around. And what you do is quite simple. You find a town which you live in, okay? And you go to that town, and you would be shocked because maybe, especially if you live in a larger town, there's more programs than what you can realize, okay? You go, and you might have three to choose from, which is great, right in your own area. There isn't going to be a sign outside saying, come one, come all, to those of you who have been sexually abused as children. No, it's not like that. It's just like when women need to go to a shelter to get away from an abusive spouse, or if a spouse needs to go somewhere. I've heard of some shelters now for men. The point is there's no sign outside. But you will find it on our website right here at NASCA. So you might have an option of three different programs. You go to those programs, and you'll meet people that way. You'll see that you're not alone. You are not alone. You're never alone. You see that just by coming here at NASCA. I'm very sorry that Eric didn't show up tonight. I don't know what happened with him, but he's a very, very busy man. Like I said, he's a model. He had turned into a model. He's an actor. He's a writer, producer, director. He might just be so hung up with work that he can't get here. So he had to listen to me. Oh, my. But anyway, the point is, getting back to the programs, whatever state that you're in, you just go to, you open it up. And we deal also with other countries, because we've had people call into our organization, and they might be from down under, as we call them. They might be from England. They might be from the UK. They might be, we had someone call in from Vietnam a few times. I mean, we've had other countries call in to our country. There's Israel. They called in. But we deal mostly, primarily, with the United States. That keeps us busy enough. But the other countries are certainly welcome. We've helped other countries actually form groups over in their own country. So I think that was over in Israel, if I remember correctly. So what I'm trying to get across here is get to know the website. And open up each one of those red blocks, and you'll see, a menu will drop down. And on that menu, it gives you all kinds of things that you can, that you can learn from. Like with David Pittman, like I was expressing before and talking about before, how to speak to your children, what to say, what not to say. And then also, too, one thing that he does suggest, and I've used this at presentations, is that parents who are going to now sit down and speak to their children, and what is the right age? All kids are different, let's face it. But if a child starts asking about their body parts when you're giving them a bath, it's time to start talking age appropriately, to your children. He tells you how to do that. And he suggests that the parents role play. Now, I'm a big role player. I like that. Me. Miss Panic Child, okay? I feel at home on stage. I sing. I do a lot of singing. And I used to be in bands, and I would become a different person on the stage. And I found out that's not uncommon, by the way, from people who suffer from panic, because after all, you're not being yourself. You're being someone else, okay? So it works. All right? So there's a lot of things you can learn from the articles that we have on, our website. There's a lot of things you can learn. And I just want to bring that up because I don't think people quite realize just how much information there is on the website. So if you're a person who needs a program, you want to be mingle with people and get to know people, and you'll see just how, you're not alone. You'll see how many people there are, for God's sake, who maybe are going through the same type of problem that you're going through. You bet. You bet. You're not unique. I'm not unique. Bill's not unique. Tammy's not unique. Penelope's not unique. No one is unique on this show. No one. We are just simply people who are dedicated to the cause of trying to work with adults of child abuse. And in my case, because I have worked with children, and I do work with children, I have kids calling me at times with their parents' permission to talk to them if they need to be spoken to. But this is what we do, okay? Some of us write our books. I wrote Panic Child a long time ago now. My God. The 2010, I suggest that people don't self-publish. Quite frankly, the royalties stopped coming in, and there was a big class action suit. One guy got a check, received a check for 90 cents. Can you imagine that? 90 cents, oh my God. And so it's better to, not self-publish. Sorry, but that's the way it is. It's never, people shouldn't ask you for money up front. There's a lot of things you have to learn, okay? I learned the hard way, too, okay? But it's important that you write your books, you get your books out there. Many people now are starting to write handbooks, too. I mean, this is great workbooks because then they don't have to call me at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, okay? they're going to open up their workbook. If they have a problem that the workbook might address in there, and they're holding it in their hand, it's more personal. There's something, if they can read the sentence over and over and over again, over and over and over again. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing. So, you know, the point is, that's just the programs. And I can't tell you how many emails over the last, I don't know, year and a half, I'm going to say especially, that I've received from people who have gone to these programs. And they're very, very happy with it, okay? So if you're a person who wants to have, you know, more than listening to a podcast, a show like NASCA, or some of the many others that are out there, now they're popping up all over the place, then do go to the NASCA website, do go to programs, and you'll be surprised how many there are near you. I can't believe that I have spoken this long. It is 9:30 on my clock, and my clock, I think, is about 3 minutes fast. So I'm glad that you listened. I hope I was able to help you. I am the night owl. If you you know, if you need help in the middle of the night, I stay up until 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning anyway. That's just the way I am. I'm programmed that way. A lot of the jobs, I work the night shift too. So it doesn't bother me at all. So if I can be of any help to you, fine. If I can't, I will direct you to someone who can help you. And that's what we do here at NASCA, okay? So maybe I should read this. I have a few minutes left, I think. Some thoughts. This is something to leave you with. We are innocent and guilt-free, yet share feelings of shame and fear. How many can say that? We should accept no responsibility for our abuse in childhood. Okay? Our low self-esteem and feelings of worthlessness are lies. Our lives changed forever in the moment we were first violated. We were diverted from our destiny. I could have been President of the United States. Okay. Our scars can become a permanent part of who we are, which is defining us. We suffer a kind of insanity, which can involve deep depression and anger. The resentments we carry are controlling us. We are not alone. We are as sick as our secrets. Recovery is possible if we work for it. We can have a complete change in our character. See, like I said much earlier on, we have to look at ourselves too, because we are not perfect people. A lot of us did make mistakes, but we weren't responsible. We were not responsible for those mistakes, okay? Some, yes. Most know, and you know the difference. Okay, so this is Carol Levine, I'm Vice President of NASCA. I'm sorry Eric wasn't able to make it tonight. I'll find out what happened to him. I hope he's well, okay? And we will be back again tomorrow. And Bill will be on tomorrow because he's going to be speaking about recovery, I believe, whatever. And I will be here too. So anyway, good night. God bless. Keep your chin up. Somehow, some way, all of this will pass. This too shall pass.
Blog Talk Radio.